This is the May 19 edition of Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Our panelists for the day include Naomi Bloom. She's with Total Farm Marketing out of West Bend, Wisconsin. Meryl Crowley is here from AgTraderTalk.com out of Watseka, Illinois. And we're joined, too, by John Zanker. He's Risk Management Commodities in Lafayette, Indiana. Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. You may find and listen to our programs anytime you'd like at willag.org, including the daily closing market report. Naomi Bloom, let's start with you from Total Farm Marketing out of West Bend, Wisconsin. I kind of want to get an update from each of you about conditions in the area. How far along are farmers in your part of the world to getting the corn and the soybean crops in the ground?
Yeah, so I'm on the eastern side of the state of Wisconsin in prime dairy country, and just looking around here and as I ride around on the back roads, especially taking my son to school, I would say we are about half planted, starting around the corner, though. We have had a soggy spring, and finally, just in the past week or so, an open window to get things planted. The last couple days, though, we had a third-inch rain the last 2 days in a row, so we're out for just a smidge, and a little bit more rain again coming tonight. So we're not totally in the clear yet, but I can tell you our dairy farmers are breathing a sigh of relief to have something in the ground, and I have to tell you, our hay crop looking pretty good so far. So that is another relief.
John Zanker at Risk Management Commodities. Are you there in Lafayette or somewhere nearby, actually? And what do crops look like?
I'm in Lafayette, and we're off to a good start here. I would say we're at least 80% done on corn, maybe 60, 70%, maybe more on soybeans. We've been fortunate. We haven't caught too many really heavy rains. We got a little bit, I believe, on Saturday, and there's a little water standing here and there, but for the most part, we're in pretty good shape. We're thankful. There's certainly some people to the north and west of us, a few hundred miles, that are not in there as good a shape, so we're pretty thankful.
Well, to the west of you, not very far, in fact, is Watseka, Illinois, where Meryl Crowley is. Hi, Meryl. Thanks for being with us. In your part of the world, what have farmers been able to do?
Well, it's kind of interesting. It depends on where you're at around here. We have a lot of sandy soils right around Watseka, down south. I think it's a little bit up north. Those guys are pretty well done. I guess I was amazed at how much was planted as it comes up with the warm weather we got last week. Let's see, Saturday we got about 2 tenths, and then yesterday we had about 5 tenths. Those areas that have the heavier soils had gotten started. We're working pretty decent. Drove around some on Monday, and they were getting a lot in the ground. But there's still fields, but they're mainly beans that have to be worked and planted. So, like I said, everything just jumping out of the ground with these rains and the heat.
Emerson Nafziger, agronomist here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois, last week said that when farmers were putting both corn and soybeans in the ground because of the heat, that it would go quickly, that probably would jump out of the ground maybe within 5 days. And if it hadn't, he said they probably also needed to check on it. I know that further to the west in the Springfield area, farmers were in a bit earlier. I think they're probably getting pretty close to done or done completely. And to the south of here, by about an hour in the Shelbyville area, they've been moving quickly and are in that same kind of area where they're getting pretty close to done. Nationally, though, the numbers on Monday were just about 49% planted. That's behind the five-year average, which was 67%. Soybeans, that's for corn, of course, soybeans at 30% planted. The five-year average there is 39%. Naomi Bloom, when you talk to producers that you deal with that are further to the west, and maybe you can tell me where those are they worried about getting this crop in the ground by the time they get to their prevent plant dates?
So when I talk to folks in Iowa, things have been cruising along pretty well. There are parts of Minnesota still pretty soggy, and my North Dakota clients are getting pretty frustrated. You know, and when you think about how much corn that North Dakota and Minnesota plant combined and how much they equate for soybean acres. It's a significant deal that they're behind, especially in this environment where we have tight ending stocks for this year and already projected for next year. So for example, for Minnesota and North Dakota, what they have for planted acres, it's 11.4 million acres combined. So that represents 13% of our U.S. corn crop for acres planted. And for soybeans, they are 16% of our planted acres for soybeans. And you got to remember, those North Dakota soybeans, those are the ones that get exported out the PNW and go to Asia. So it's kind of a big deal that they're behind. And it's wonderful, wonderful that the rest of the Midwest is getting caught up. But some of the key states of production are still very behind.
When you take that all into consideration, I'm wondering how you view the marketplace at this time, John Zenker. For farmers, new crop that is, heading into the harvest season later in the year, in the fall, several months from now, is there anything that they should think about today as it relates to basis potentially because of the conditions across the Midwest?
Well, to expand on just what Naomi was talking about, extremely good points, and it could impact basis on soybeans as far as having to export more beans out of the Gulf to make up for that North Dakota crop. But, you know, just to put some raw numbers onto this, we're behind right now, quite a ways behind where we were in 2020. And, of course, 2019 was a slow year, and we had a lot of prevent plant. But we also had quite a bit of prevent plant in North Dakota and South Dakota in 2020. And we're well behind where we were in 2020. So just being conservative, and I think the numbers that Naomi ran across and where those people are and what the forecast is, you know, I think I'm being conservative in saying we're going to lose 1.5 million acres to prevent plant. It could easily be 2.5 million because – you know, Minnesota, 95% planted in 2020 and just 35% on this past weekend. And they had a lot of rain through the central southern part of the state. So, but let's just say 1.5 million acres at 130 bushel the acre. So on the low side there, 195 million. You take that off the projected carryout right now, and that's 1.165 billion. And that's at 177. And 177's gotten a little bit tougher, certainly with the yield reduction we're seeing in the northwestern Corn Belt. And just, you know, Wisconsin and, you know, a few other states where we're just, we've taken the edge off. It's going to be tougher to get there. But if we have a dry summer, not extremely dry, we take 5% off of this crop, that takes you down to 168. You've got a carryout. With reduced demand versus what the USDA, you have a carryout under 700 million, tightest all-time stocks ratio, stocks usage ratio in history. So things get kind of crazy. And, you know, from a basis perspective, going back to your original question, things get pretty tight. So the upside potential in this market is still huge, Todd. And yes, we can have a perfect growing season from this point forward and have a record yield. But we haven't seen perfect for quite a while. In fact, the last year that I looked at as being close to perfect was from June 1st on, was 2009. From planting, early planting until harvest, you have to go all the way back to 2004. So the odds are not with us in having that perfect type growing season.
Merrill Crowley, anything additional that you'd like to add here, or if you would prefer, prevent plant is one option. However, acreage shift in some of those areas is still available, and I'm wondering whether you've thought very much about that as well.
Informa came out just a couple days ago, and they were suggesting they're looking at 2 million more acres of corn from what the USDA gave us in the end of March. So first of all, you got to try to figure out where you're at in relation to past March reports and what you'll see down the road. I still think we're going to see some increase because of the price. I understand that we have difficulties with the fertilizer. We have difficulties with chemicals. But I'm just listening to these guys go in and out with 28 for spraying. And at least here, it doesn't seem like we have any loss of anhydrous. The other thing is, you know, we didn't have a perfect year last year. You know, it was dry in the West, and yet we had a, according to the USDA, we had a record yield. So, you know, these hybrids have changed when you go back not just too many years ago. If we have basically a 14.5 million, you know, billion bushel crop, which is still possible, then you're going to have plenty of hedging come when the seasonal highs basically hit. And I say that in an interesting point because the seasonal, the top dead high seasonal, is tomorrow for corn. Now, it goes sideways for several weeks into about June 17th before it starts running, and then the price usually declines. And that is one of the best times to short corn during the year because people kind of have an idea what their pollination is and they see what their crop looks like. We got past all the planting questions. And so I don't know how this is going to turn out as far as who's going to plant what and whether or not they're going to pre-vent plant or not. But farmers like to plant. We go by through this stuff, and it's just more exasperated, or I shouldn't say exasperating. It is a larger concern now because of our tight supplies. And, yes, things are tight. Any weather scare is going to kick this market and push it probably to new all-time highs. But if you're just looking at the seasonals and what that might do for you, you're coming right up upon the top of the seasonals. Like I said, June 17th is the end of the sideways movements for corn. Then around June 14th, I believe, is the highs for the beans. So, I don't know. We always seem to talk about planning issue and talk about and how it seems to get done. I'm not going to argue with 1.5 or 2 million prevent plant, but we may have some other acres coming on board here that we just didn't think of.
The esteemed ag economist from the University of Illinois, Darryl Good, always said farmers get the corn in the ground one way or the other, and it always ends up being planted. Speaking of corn, Naomi Bloom, I'm wondering, last week, when you took a look at the World Agricultural Supply and Demand Estimate, its first preview of the new crop balance sheet for corn, it left the ethanol flat, and I was on a teleconference earlier today, a Zoom meeting, that was open to everybody with the current chair of the World Agricultural Outlook Board that puts those WASDE figures together. And they said they left it flat because that's what their expectation for the year is, related to usage and the blend wall. And he mentioned the blend wall specifically, so I'm wondering, when you look at that number, I think many thought it might go up some, given consumer driving. Were you concerned that it did not go up?
No, I wasn't, because they've got it at 5.375 billion bushels for next year, which matches this year. And you have to remember that on the previous two USDA reports, it was one or the other, or maybe even both, they had already increased it. So I think that the fact that they just kept it steady and firm, to me, was okay for now, based on what we know about what's happening in the world at this moment, what we know about all the different decisions coming down the pipeline. I thought it was an okay move. It's a strong number. I think the biggest number we've ever had in history was 5.6 billion. So the fact that we're at 5.375, I'm okay with it. It still shows strong demand. We also have strong exports yet. Going into next year, just down a little bit from this year. But, I mean, overall, it still is a friendly corn story from a demand standpoint. So, and we have, you know, sorghum that can be, you know, woven into that story. We're seeing sorghum exports stay strong. Feed wheat demand is being strong, too, as well. So I think that the ethanol story for corn is still going to be out there. And I was okay with that number.
John Zanker, the 2.5 billion bushels in exports for this year pushed down to 2.4 billion, as Naomi made alluded to. That number down 100 million bushels. Given what's happening in Ukraine and Russia, is there room for it to run to the higher side?
I think there's quite a bit of room. And I agree 100% with Naomi on the ethanol. I don't think there's anything excessive there. And we may be looking at $5 gasoline here before long. If the European Union gets its act together and can agree to start shutting down Russian crude and gas, I think you're going to see that $130 high that we saw at the start of the war. I think that gets taken out, and that's going to be $5 gasoline. So I'm pretty confident of that. And I don't think the trade is fully digested yet what's going on in Ukraine. They're not going to export much corn. And if the Russians are willing to bomb churches and schools and hospitals and train stations full of people and do the atrocities that they've done, I would say there's a pretty good chance they're going to light a lot of wheat fields on fire when it gets ripe. And maybe the same thing with whatever corn was harvested. And, you know, we talked about this last time. What are the Ukrainians farmers going to do if they get it harvested? Where's it going to go? A lot of those silos are already full at the ports, and they're not going to be taking it to the ports anyway. So I think that export number could be 2.8 billion. Let's keep in mind that China imported more corn from Ukraine last year than we did in 21, and that was the most corn we'd ever exported to them in 1 year. So I think that number could be bigger. And it's just, you know, typically when we have prices like this, we all learned this in Econ 101. We saw it in 2012, our exports fell off a cliff, didn't even make it to 800 million, which is the number that was just incredible to even try to digest. We're in a different state. We're in a different state of the world economy, and things can get nuts. And so we're not cutting demand back as sharp as we would have in the past with these kind of prices. And I think that's just a dynamic that we have not had to deal with before, Todd.
Merrill Crowley, the feed and residual number is the place the USDA took year-over-year figures down the most for corn, from 5.625 billion to 5.35, or down 275 million bushels. Does this worry you?
I'm not really into what the USDA wants to tell me.
What do you think about? Well, let me ask it a different way. Is the price of food, the price of meat in particular, high enough or moving high enough that consumers will back off?
I think you're seeing that. I think you had Target come out and saw a 25% decrease. Now, I know they sell more than just food, but you also had Walmart come out with a decrease in earnings. And if those two stores are seeing decreases in earnings, then you are seeing consumers back off from buying. Every day we go out every week that we go out and try to get our meat supplies bought, it's just incredible what it's doing. You know, and we don't buy a lot, but it can be as much as $100 more a week than what we spent last year. And, you know, how can people continue to do that, especially if they're driving? John brought up the gasoline price maybe hitting $5. J.P. Morgan was out with an article, I believe they were talking $6.60 if things continue. Well, we don't know if things are going to continue. At what point do, you know, the Japanese bombed Pearl Harbor because they didn't have fuel. We cut off 80% of their fuel supply. At what point does that become a concern? Now, I know the UN and the U.S. are not at war, that they need the fuel supplies like Japan did at the time. But you're going to hit a point where the needs to feed your people and to provide them fuel is going to become crucial and may make a big change in this war effort. On the other side of the coin, you have Ukraine gaining ground. One general was saying that they only thought the Russians had about 90 days, and Ukraine could possibly, if anything doesn't change, and it always changes, could possibly have kicked the Russian out in 90 days. Well, it'll still take time to build back your ports, but the market will look ahead and say, this supply is going to be coming back. And what would that do to the market? I don't want people to get the wrong idea. I'm not bearish. But everybody is looking and talking about the bullish side of things, and nobody's looking at the bearish side. And I want people to be aware of what could happen. In World War II, they just set price limits on everything, and that could happen here. Getting back to your ethanol, they're having high prices for sugar in Brazil because I think the frost cut some of their cane, or the drought is hurting some of their sugar cane. So, yeah, I think our exports will continue in that realm.
Naomi Bloom, because you're in dairy country, and I do not know the answer to this question, because milk is consumed directly by people, is there an indicator within that segment of the livestock industry that can lead the marketplace at all? And what does it tell you if that's the case?
So from the dairy side of things, a few indicators that we keep an eye on, overall milk production, and that's been trending lower for about a year. We just had a report come out yesterday. Milk production year over year was down nearly 1%, and 1% in the dairy industry is a huge deal. And that's why we saw Class 3 milk futures respond today, working higher. So the dairy story continues to also be friendly. The other things that we monitor there is our export market. And so exports are composed of multiple things, and primarily right now what's been hot is the butter market for export, cheese exports, up 5 to 10% year over year. So there's a very friendly story there. Now, happening in my part of Wisconsin, we're not expanding dairy farms. Usually when you get these high prices, you start hearing about dairy farm expansions, like everybody's doing it and the whole neighborhood gets all gossipy. It's not happening this year. And it's not happening, of course, well, a few things. Building costs are higher, and the bigger thing is labor. We don't have enough labor. And with these higher input costs, it's a tricky thing to manage. So a lot of dairies are just kind of holding steady. Things are going all right. We've got cheese plants that are expanding in Wisconsin to fulfill some of that demand. But the dairy market right now, it's higher prices, but just like everything, margins are a little bit thinner because the inputs are so high. But the bigger picture thing is that the production is just continuing to trend lower.
I'd like to talk about old crop supplies and availability out of South America from the second crop, John, or Safrina corn. It should be coming into the system within a month and a half or so. What do we know about that crop? And that happens to coincide with our summer months, of course, too. And what's the potential there for the marketplace, at least in the old crop, to be fairly explosive?
Well, their crop's going to be substantially larger than it was a year ago. We know that. But CONAB just reduced their estimate by 4.5 million tons. I think Agro was at about the same area. It's an issue. And again, just another one of those things where we're reducing supply in a year where we can't reduce supply. And China doesn't like Brazilian corn. They may make some adjustments for that to happen and to help replace what they're going to lose from the Ukraine. But they do that. They take some Brazilian corn, then we have to come in and fill up some of that slack where the Brazilian corn was going. So it's easy to be bullish longer term. I think Merrill makes an excellent case, and we're certainly looking at that sort of situation too, with and what we're doing with some of our strategies with selling cash and covering with calls and so on. But it's just an explosive situation that we've never seen before. And, how can we keep demand up with these kind of prices? Well, we have been keeping demand up pretty well. And it just gets scary. What if here we've done all these things. We've taken the price. This is the highest these corn has ever been in the spring. Same thing for no liver beans. And we're not even really worried about our crop yet. We don't have a big scare of any kind going on to where we're talking about yields falling below record. So it's an exciting time. Unfortunately, a lot of it's being driven by what's going on in Ukraine. And but I don't, even if that goes on for only 90 days, that's a huge situation. And we're going to have to see the world make an adjustment that it's never had to make since World War II.
Joe Glauber, looking at the USDA numbers, and he's the former chief economist at USDA, says that the numbers and the futures markets all reflect an idea that wheat will not come into balance in any real form until at least next summer, the summer of 2023. Does that hold up the whole of the marketplace? And I know, Merrill, you've talked about this in the other side, that everybody's bullish, but that fundamental seems like it is there for a while. And what are the things other than Ukraine and Russia that really could put a damper on it? And maybe, I guess I'm asking about inflation more than anything else.
Well, inflation is definitely hitting. It's probably going to be more like a stagflation event. And initially, the corn and the ag products usually do better in the initial parts of an inflation where the stock market gets hit. But if we were to go into a full-blown recession, I think you're going to see your commodities get hit right along with that. As far as the wheat crop, you know, we went from having just a super large wheat crop, but the U.S. has probably the highest prices for wheat as of yet. And what are we going to do to encourage our exports? Our dollar just made a brand new high around 105, broken triple top at 103. The range trades suggest a high at 188.8 to 120.48, with the old high back in July of 2001 at 121.29. That's a five-year sideways move. You would kind of think it's going to go high, but it's currently acting like a false breakout, and below 103.07 confirms that false breakout. It acts like maybe this was a false breakout and the dollar's going to decrease. But as it stands right now, it is helping prevent exports from our country, making them much higher. So they really have to want or need them to come get them. About the only buyer we have right now in beans, for the most part, is China. Same thing with corn, and they haven't been in the market for corn in quite some time. I don't know how much of that is due to their COVID shutdowns. That's been 7 weeks, I believe, to date. And Shanghai is the number one export as of tonnage in the world. And if you see an overlay picture of how many ships are sitting around waiting, it's mind-boggling to see that and wondering what that is going to do to all the economies. If it has the same effect as when we were in our lockdown in COVID earlier, then the recession is almost surely guaranteed. We got a lot of things that seem to be telling me that recession will eventually pull things down at the end of the year. When you have highs early in the year, you tend to have a big drop into October. Cycle lows, two-year cycle lows are due in October, and you get a weather event, you can take all that and throw it out the window because the market's going to go crazy for a while. From what level, I don't know. But like I said, the seasonals are coming due. We tend to break after that, and then we head into the weather markets.
With volatility, Naomi, there is usually the ability to reap some rewards, but only if you are managing risk. What do you tell producers to do?
Just be aware of both sides of the scenario. It's a situation where, yeah, if you're making cash sales now, old crop, new crop, to talk with them about what could make the market go a little higher or a lot higher, and where's the point that they would want to potentially be part of that with a call option strategy. Now, on the flip side of it, you've got the folks in North Dakota right now who, you know, just getting a little bit planted, a little nervous. You know, they're like, well, gee, do I want to forward contract anything if I'm not totally sure that I'm going to have, you know, a record crop, or if I'm only going to have a third of a crop. So then we're looking at defensive strategies to cover unpriced bushels. As both gentlemen have said, seasonally we're starting to approach that window where we have our seasonal high. And so a lot of times, you know, it's any time between mid-June, back up here to mid-May. So mid-May to mid-June with a little bit of a last bump at 4th of July and a little weather scare. So you want to be aware of why this market could work down a little bit and have that strategy in place. And that way it just takes some of the emotional part of marketing away. When you have the math all laid out, you can see and know comfortably what your bottom line is going to be. And that's just how you can continue growth year after year.
John, crop insurance gives producers the ability, I believe, to manage some of that risk. And so not thinking about prevent plant here, but areas in other parts of the Midwest, the northern Corn Belt, northwestern Corn Belt, how should they think about, and about 95% of producers take some form of crop insurance, but how should they really think about their crop insurance as part of their risk management tool set at this point in the growing season?
It's a huge part, and especially if you're in that 85, certainly 80 to 85. And I would say most producers across the three I states would fill that category. I think it allows you to be pretty aggressive. If your crop's in, it looks good. Historically, I've in high price scenarios, I've been willing to go to 75% of an average yield. If it makes some sense, and from a profitability standpoint, and it certainly does make some sense at these levels. And as Naomi talked about, get some bushels on the books, get some bushels priced. Look at that call coverage. Again, $10 corn is not a big stretch this year. 5% yield reduction, certainly a 10% yield reduction, and we're probably going to see $10 corn. Merrill makes an exceptional point that, and I don't know how long the other two have been around, but I've been in the farmer marketing for 37 years. And, there's been times I've been bullish going into the 4th of July. And, it was a little bit painful on the 5th of July, maybe when the forecast changed overnight. So, there's a lot of things out there that could take us to $10. There's some things out there that could take us to $5.50. on the corn, and but these input costs, $5.50 gets a, it starts squeezing it. But use that crop insurance. Be aggressive. And just one thing too, I get a lot of questions about getting some 23 corn on the books. I like selling premium, and there's a big premium on 22 corn to 23. Until I'm up against my wall for selling 22 bushels, and again, that might. 80-85% policy, I'm going to price 70-75% of my corn, my 22 corn at a premium before I even think about selling 23. The only difference between, a bushel of corn to me is when it's taxed. What year is it taxed in? So I like selling premium, and there's certainly a good premium on the 22 over 23.
It's interesting with crop insurance and some of these prices we're talking about, and they could easily happen if you take the right type of drought, and it doesn't have to be a 2012 in this particular instance to do that. But right now, China is trading corn. They have traded corn to at least 11.72 and beans to 26.75. Well, crop insurance only paid double of the spring price, and if our corn got to the area where it is in China, 11.80 is double the price. If soybeans get to 26.75 like it is in China, the double is 28.66. So, and wheat is 14.16, and wheat price is around 13. I didn't get to 12, 13, around 12. So, what I'm getting at is, you kind of need to keep that in the back of your mind too. If the right time of drought hits, these prices could go up. I don't think it's quite as lofty as some have been saying, but. There is a limitation. We don't talk about it much simply because we've never had the issue to follow through with it. So I would keep that in mind if I was working and seeing a drought start to push our prices higher.
Now let's get a final word from each of our panelists. John Zanker of Risk Management Commodities out of Lafayette, Indiana. I'll start with you today.
Well, I think we're just in an explosive environment, and that explosion could go either way, of course. And Naomi and Merrill pointed that out quite well. And $10 corn, $5 corn, that might be a good range to say if some things go wrong, if the war ends early, and we have a perfect growing season from here on out, $5 corn is not out of the question. On the other hand, our margin of error this year is the least it has been in the 41 years that I've been involved in the grain business. So $10 corn, $11.70 corn, those are things that are not impossible. And just we need to be careful. Farmers need to be very careful about what kind of strategies they're using to, you know, to make sure they don't put themselves in a position to where a good year can turn into a bad year because they're on the wrong side of a futures position or something like that.
Naomi Bloom from Total Farm Marketing, your final word?
Yeah, one thing that's different than this year than years past is, you know, when we'd have previous bull markets, it would be one or two commodities that were getting things kind of riled up. And what's different this year is that coming into the year, we had 9 grain and oilseed commodities here in the United States that had ending stocks that were cut in half from years prior. So it's not normal to have 9 grain and oilseed commodities all at the same time fighting for acres, fighting for perfect weather, fighting for attention, and having strong demand continue. And then when we had that South American soybean crop not be perfect, it just exacerbated the situation. So the world needs us to have a perfect crop this year, and we're already not having it. The USDA has said that by already lowering corn yield. We have to look at what's happening in Europe with their weather. It's not perfect. Too much rain in Germany. It's getting dry in parts of France. Watching the weather in Russia, and then, of course, trying to figure out what is going to be happening in China because of the amount of rice and the amount of corn and wheat that they grow as well. So a lot of things to handle when you think about how much grain is truly grown in the Northern Hemisphere. It's going to be potential for volatility for months to come, but do keep in mind the seasonals because they, year in and year out, have the ability to somehow always work. So at some point, prices would slide back, but how low they slide back has yet to be seen.
Merrill Crowley of AgTraderTalk.com, your final word, please.
Well, Naomi and John have done a very good job of summing this up, I think, in these final comments. The thing I would add is, at this particular time, soybeans have yet to close above their Feb highs. SEP and DEIS corn are the only contracts to take out the April 29th highs for corn. The wheat contracts did fill the gap today. And I do have some, it's 1360, I believe, is where I have the projected head and shoulders taking us to there. After this is filled, we'll have to see now if we can find the fundamentals to push it higher. Corn and beans, in my opinion, are in a range trade. Normally, when you have a range trade at this point in time, it suggests the market is pausing for more info and tends eventually to lead to higher highs.
Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. You may find and listen to the whole of our program anytime you'd like at willag.org. The website again, willag.org. Our thanks go to our panelists for the week, including Merrill Crowley from AgTraderTalk.com out of Watseka, Illinois. John Zanker, Risk Management Commodities, that's rmcommodities.com out of Lafayette, Indiana, and Naomi Bloom of TotalFarmMarketing.com from West Bend, Wisconsin. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.